TV. Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
On the radio.
Roll it there, Colette.
Hey, how you doing?
Bazinga.
Well, I didn't expect a kind of Spanish Inquisition.
One for everybody in the audience.
It's going to be legendary.
You just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
I'm having a little birthday thing for Ivy on Saturday.
Pizza Express, if you...
Oh, Pizza Express, that's a good idea. So much easier than going to all the trouble of organising a real proper party. And you're not really a kids' party person, are you, Julia?
Yeah, I kids' party. I kids' party real hard. Yeah, if you let me finish my sentence. I was going to say that... Pizza Express is great if you like that kind of thing, but what I've been planning for quite some time now is a massive party on Saturday at mine.
What's the theme?
Tarts and Vickers. I'm joking, Anne. That's a joke. There's no theme. It's a BYO theme. Fine, pirate robots.
There you go. Sharon Horgan and Graham Linehan had a comedy baby. It's called Motherland, and it's on BBC Two on Tuesdays at 11:15. James Dempsey joins us once again. It's, you would have thought Graham Linehan and Sharon Horgan, they're both so hot right now, yeah, etc., that they would put it on at an earlier time. Or
yeah, I find it a very odd time because even next week's episode is on at 11:45 on Tuesday night.
Okay.
And that is a real graveyard shift. Now, admittedly, this is a BBC sitcom and they have made all the episodes available on the BBC iPlayer, which, you know, post-Brexit, we're never going to get our hands on. So you need to say you're a recorder for this one, basically. Mm. Or maybe it'll come at some... It could potentially at some point come to one of our channels. I guess this is part of this current, you know, vague as in nouvelle vague of like of female-led sitcoms in which the women are slightly anti-heroic, because this time around you have this actress named Anna Maxwell-Martin playing Julia, who is this very put-upon single mother living in London, and as you can hear in the clip there, is sort of struggling to compete with both the sort of yummy mummies at the cafe while coming to terms with having a career and trying to have it all and so on and so forth. And I kind of was struck a little bit by this, by sort of how it's a bit of a misnomer to say like this is, you know, this incredibly brave original sitcom that looks at parenting from, you know, the warts and all aspect, because that's every sitcom about parenting.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's like the real fresh look would be A Perfect Parent.
Yeah.
Right? Because we don't get that. Mm. We always get these put upon harangued parents who are struggling to have it all.
And it's not a million miles away from catastrophe then.
No. I mean, I was actually again struck by how Sharon Horgan's sort of comedic output, you know, it follows a very well-worn path, in the sense of catastrophe is about a man and woman who have a one-night stand and produces a baby. We've definitely seen that before. Divorce, her HBO show, is about a couple who get divorced. We've definitely seen that before. This is about a single mother struggling to have it all. We have definitely seen that before. So I suppose the challenge of doing something when we've seen it all before is you have to do it particularly well in order to kind of rise above the constraints of the format. I've only seen two episodes of this, of Motherland. So it came out on the BBC actually last September, I think, as a pilot.
Mm.
And they presented one episode. And I actually think the pilot episode is funnier than this episode. And I almost think you're at a disadvantage if you haven't seen the pilot, because in this first of six, as is always the way in UK sitcoms, you're just very much thrown at the characters without really any explanation of who they are. So there are, you know, you have Julia as the main, but then you have two friends of hers, one being Diane Morgan, who's better known as Philomena Crunch. I can't remember this, you know, comedian who plays Liz, who's kind of a take no prisoners, balls to the wall type mother.
Okay.
And then the other one is a stay-at-home dad named Kevin. And in this episode, you know, I actually saw the pilot after I saw this first episode of the run. I was kind of going, who are these people? What is their relationship to each other? You know, it didn't explain that well at all. So having seen the pilot, I understand a little bit better what their role is with each other. Then you have the archetypal, you know, perfect yummy mummy, who's played by Lucy Punch, who is kind of a face people would definitely recognize, the most recognizable of the bunch probably. And she is, again, just a very, you know, she's exactly like the character played by the Scottish woman in Catastrophe, whose name I can't, Ashley Jenkins.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of character again. So it's a lot of stock stuff. I'm not saying I didn't enjoy it. Certainly, as a half an hour sitcom go, I found it charming enough. Did I find it absolutely laugh out loud hilarious like I often find Catastrophe? No. But what I will say going forward was a couple of very funny jokes throughout. What I found a little bit harder to take was Julia as your main character is actually a very difficult character to get right, because she is this, you know, as we said now several times, struggling single mother. And in it, she's supposed to be quite manic and, you know, and angry and lash out kind of all the time. Mm. And one of the characters in the show is actually her mother. So the grandmother of, we'll say, her children. And in this opening episode, she just arrives while her mother is having lunch to sort of say, why won't you mind the kids? Mind the kids, mind the kids. And, you know, obviously, I'm coming from a place of privilege where I don't have to mind any genetic offspring of my own. So that's not a concern of mine. And I can understand it probably is a concern. I have a mother, I have a sister who has children, and I know sometimes she's called upon to step in. But Julia just sort of marches right up to her and is very demanding in this very kind of unlikable way of saying, like, why aren't you taking care of my kids? And as a viewer, you know, as a cis man sitting there with no kids of my own, I'm sort of going, why don't you mind your own kids kind of thing. So the problem with Julia as a character is she's, you know, she's written to be this, you know, aggressive, assertive type. But that can come, unless you get the balance of that exactly right, it can come across as kind of annoying and unlikable and unsympathetic.
Yeah.
And for me, they didn't quite get that balance right in the first episode. There are probably people texting in to give out to me about my patriarchal views.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, then again, in Horgan's previous work, she does have, and she, you know, she has female characters who she can tip over the being a total wagon. Now, it's, you know, it's a balance usually, and they usually, because they're funny, you kind of let them away with it. But you can see them being unkind. You can see
definitely
them being
selfish. And I think perhaps what has worked better in the other shows is that because the jokes are funnier, you're more patient with that kind of behavior.
Yeah.
For me, the jokes were just not quite acidic or arch enough to really kind of land that kind of punch. And maybe it wasn't the jokes, maybe it was the performance of the actress. You know, for me, it just didn't quite land as I think they were intending it to. But that is just my opinion, and people are entitled to.
We've just been discussing this like it's a Sharon Horgan comedy. Is there an air of Tracy Graham Lennon in this at all?
Not in the way that you would maybe expect, having, you know, seen, you know, his two most successful sitcoms being Father Ted and The IT Crowd. They're a far more old-fashioned sitcom in the sense of laugh track and slightly, you know, very self-contained episodes and a lot of surrealist kind of silly slapstick kind of stuff. There was more of the silly slapstick, we'll say, in the pilot than I saw in the first episode of the series, we'll say. In the pilot, a finger gets chopped off and it is played for laughs quite funnily and works very effectively because it's just like whatever kind of thing. Her finger is literally hanging off and she's a mother, so she's a bit busy. So you do get a bit of the pratfalls this time around and some kind of, you know, I don't know if vomit falls under the, you know, the taxonomy of scatological humor. I'm not sure. But anyway, right? There's a few of those kind of jokes. But to me, it seemed more Horgan than Linhan, definitely.
Interesting. Still, though, I do want to have a look at it. Right, some bits of TV news. Something that will probably be of exciting news to our new raft of 15-year-old listeners. We'd like to welcome, and to all of you, I'd like to say, sit up straight and take your hands out of your trousers. Amazon apparently is going to make Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, this I found very odd, right? So Amazon are kind of lagging behind the other online streaming giants, despite having already, you know, this massive market at which to pitch their stuff, because they've been retailing for, like, I don't know what, 15 years. So they came out of the traps very quickly with Transparent, which was their big critical hit, and they haven't really managed to capture anything along that lines again. And seemingly, they're very interested in acquiring the rights for The Lord of the Rings by J.R.R. Tolkien. And it comes at a heavy price, let me say. It was reported that the Tolkien estate wants $250 million for the rights.
Ka-ching.
Which is even before you get to the production costs of actually making the thing. And there's no way you can, you know, do a half-baked job on this kind of fantasy epic, particularly in the light of the fact that the trilogy of movies was so well received, you know, 15 years ago when it came out, that now you need to sort of up the ante somehow, or make a completely different version of the same thing.
Well, that would be my question. What's the point? Because you can't tell the same story, because people, you know, the films can't be bested in that way.
And if anything, what we learned from the Hobbit series was that actually people were very content with The Lord of the Rings and really didn't need Gilding the Lily three times again kind of thing. So look, this is very early days, but it does seem that Amazon are chasing this very aggressively. They want to acquire the rights more so than anyone else to develop a kind of Game of Thrones style multi-season show. Now, those of us who grew up or have seen at least the Peter Jackson ones will know that you don't need five seasons to tell that story. It can be very effectively told in just 12 hours. But when it comes out, if it all comes together, will I sit down and watch it? Probably. If, you know, it'll have a bit of a curio effect to it as well.
That's why they know then. Right. And the new actor to play, and I assume this is just because as she gets older, Elizabeth II has been named.
Yeah. So people will watch, I'm sure. I talked about The Crown when it came out last year. The second season is about a month away from release, and that the trailer for that has come out. And I think it's a very stylish, if slightly very pro-monarchy drama, to the point of being a bit unrealistic.
Slightly pro-monarchy.
But it is going to be kind of a vaguely anthology series, in the sense that I think we're going to get two seasons of each cast before they sort of up the age a little bit. And they've just announced, Peter Morgan has announced, that Olivia Colman is going to be taking over from Claire Foy as Queen Elizabeth II. So Olivia Colman, people I guess will know best really as Sophie from Peep Show. That was her kind of big break.
Yeah.
But has since gone on to become like sort of the new Julie Walters of British TV, in the sense you can just put her in absolutely anything and people love her. So her biggest hits of late would be Broadchurch. I guess I'll be kind of interested to see her approach to the Queen Elizabeth voice, because, you know, I don't really think of her as that kind of super posh, super, you know.
No, but I suppose if you can do it, you can do it.
If you can do it, you can do it. No one else has been announced yet, but look, I think what's interesting is she's going to play this sort of, you know, middle-aged Queen Elizabeth, and we're going to then start seeing the more interesting prime ministers come in as well, including Thatcher at some point as well.
The thing is, as you said, they're saying six or seven series. They're keeping it kind of vague. They're actually waiting for Elizabeth to die. They are, just so they can have a sense. Then they'll know how many series they're going to do.
And then it'll be just the warts and all, smoking 50 cigarettes.
Yeah, Monica's thing will die out. Right, we do have to take a commercial break. After that, is it The New Handmaid's Tale, Alias Grace, coming up in a minute.
It's difficult for me to begin talking. I've not talked very much in the past 15 years. I don't know what you want me to say.
Well, it isn't what I want you to say, but what you want to say to yourself that's of interest to me.
I have no wants of that kind. It isn't my place to want to say anything.
Can you tell me about the quilt you're making?
It's for Lydia, the governor's daughter. It's a log cabin quilt. Every young woman should have one before marriage. It means the home. And at the centre, there's always a red square, which means the hearth fire.
There you go. That's from Alias Grace. All six episodes are streaming now on Netflix. James, it's another Margaret Atwood adaptation.
Yeah, the third this year, actually.
Wow. But could it? Have we reached the point where Margaret Atwood could just knock out any of crap, like a monkey with a laser from the future, and they'd still make a TV series out of it, and everyone would say it was great?
I guess she's so hot right now. Yeah. Kind of the praise they're looking for. Yeah, I approached this absolutely sort of sight unseen. I knew nothing about the novel at all, which I think came out in 1996, was shortlisted for the Booker Prize. That I know that simply because I read the Wikipedia article. I can't tell you anything more about it than that. It is based on a true, at least It's kind of a bit of true crime, but speculative true crime at that. So it is based on a real case from 19th century Canada, where this Irish woman from the north of Ireland, but Irish at the time, we'll say, named Grace Marks, emigrated as a teenager to Canada, and then ended up working as a servant, and may or may not have been involved in the murder of the man whose household she was working in and his housekeeper, who was played by Anna Paquin. And she was found guilty, which we know from the very beginning, along with another man who was hanged for the crime. And before he was hanged, he made these claims that Grace had pushed him to do it. She'd been manipulative and she had, forced him to do everything and was pulling all the strings. And here you get a piece, a six-hour drama, which is about how she has become this celebrated murderess living in prison. And people are a lot of people are on her side. They think she's completely innocent, and they hire a psychoanalyst to come and analyse her to see if she could have been, whether or not she's innocent and should be released from prison because of reasons of insanity or something along the lines of that. So what you get then is this incredibly stylish and very evocative, and really, I was really taken aback by how much I liked it, because, it just had come out of nowhere. Drama in which she is having conversations with her sort of analyst about her life. And you're getting a lot of voiceover and narration of her past, much like The Handmaid's Tale.
This is justified, given it's threaded through her.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And what is really remarkable about this is how this is sort of a completely female-made piece of television. So it's based on a novel by Margaret Atwood. It's written by Sarah Polley, who is a Canadian actress turned filmmaker, who's kind of a bit of an indie darling and very well-respected documentary filmmaker as well as sort of narrative filmmaker. She made Away From Her, which was Julie Christie's big return that got her nominated for an Oscar a few years ago.
Right, yeah.
And then it's directed by Mary Harron, who directed American Psycho, which is this big cult movie. And it has a lot of the kind of, the fingerprints of American Psycho are all over this, in the sense that it is very detailed and very highly produced and stylized. Lots of edits and cuts, left, back and center while narration is going on. And it is centered with this very enigmatic performance by an actress named Sarah Gadon, who is Canadian, but we heard her speaking there, which I think is
good
a
accent.
Very
yeah.
credible Northern Irish
very
accent.
Yeah.
When I started watching, I didn't really know where it was going. And then as soon as I sort of caught on to the fact that she's from the north of Ireland, I was like, yeah, she's nailed it.
Mm.
And she is just, she's got this sort of very luminous screen presence, despite being incredibly pale and opaque almost. She's kind of hard to read, which is perfect for the character. And it is really enthralling. I found it very, very exciting. The mystery, I thought, drove me right to the end. At six episodes is perfect. It doesn't outstay its welcome. There's not going to be a follow-up. This is a
mini-series.
Fantastic.
I love it.
So I highly recommend this.
And I suppose, because we don't know if she did it or not, it's about other people's projections onto the central character.
Very much.
Yeah.
While also you do get the impression that she is aware that she is able to influence those perceptions. And in her narration, you sort of hear her saying things that indicate she's more aware of what's going on than she's letting known, which then adds more speculation of whether or not she's this great master, string puller or not.
Okay, right. Sounds great. Enthralling, as James said. Will the next show be enthralling? It's the Nathan Carter Show. Here's a clip.
Fantastic, Shane Filan.
Cheers, Nathan. How are you, man? How are you?
Lovely song, wasn't it?
Thank you. Thank you very much.
That's a track off your new album?
It is, yeah. The new album came out a couple of months ago, yeah. So that's one of the songs off that. So hope you liked it, everybody.
It was lovely. It was an NSYNC song, you were saying, originally?
It was, actually. It was written by Richard Marx, of writer, Weight and Fame. And yeah, an NSYNC song in 2000 was written. And I just loved the song ever since I heard it. And I said, someday I'm going to record that song. Yeah. And 17 years later, I recorded the song. So.
There you go. Cracking story there. Thanks for that, Shane. That's the Nathan Carter Show. It's on Sundays at 9:30 on RT1. This is what it is, though, and you either like it or you don't.
I don't quite agree with that statement, right?
Okay.
So I thought, right, now, first of all, I don't know why Irish television planners have forsaken Sunday nights to either Blind Date or this.
Nathan Carter is huge.
Nathan Carter is huge.
He's a demigod.
And
a colossus astriding our island.
I totally understand that, right? So I don't listen to Irish country music, and therefore I'm not in the demographic of the audience that wants, that RT is appealing to. But I did watch, you know, RTÉ had this like ongoing documentary series about Irish country music, a very lighthearted half hour type show. It was very enjoyable and really entertaining and a good insight into that whole world. Here you get Nathan Carter, who I think is the most charmless person I have ever seen on television.
Oh, God.
He is just this empty cipher through which music croons, and that is it. I honestly got nothing. I was watching it, and it felt like I was back in my childhood, you know, on a family holiday to Galway, where we only had RTÉ1 and RTÉ2, and there'd be no escaping what was on TV for an hour, and you would be just forced to watch it. The music is grand, right? Fine. Except if you like that kind of music, then perfect. You get to see him, you know, squeeze the squeeze box and play the piano and do a bit of singing. Then you have these interviews that are the most banal, boring things you have ever heard in your life, in which he is just reading out a set of questions that have clearly been given to him by a producer with absolutely no sort of pickup of the conversation. You know, it's just question, wait for the answer. Okay, now the next question, wait for the answer. Okay, now the next one. Then you have this really bizarre segment where they try to enliven the thing by having him do these sort of pranks to the unsuspecting member of his audience, which means he dresses up in like drag, but or, you know, as an old man or something. And you might think then he'll go up to them and, you know, interact with them some way. Mm. But actually, he dressed up as an old woman and then he sat across the room and he played the piano and that was it. And they were across the room and then he sort of said, oh, did you notice me? I was across the room and the women were like, no, didn't see you. And then he and then he pretends to be their taxi driver wearing, you know, like wearing a fake beard, so fake that if you got into the car, I mean, you notice what your taxi driver looks like, right? Maybe you won't remember his face or her or
you'd
her
notice
face.
A fake beard.
You'd notice a massive fake beard. And yet they're just singing along to Wagon Wheel in the back of the car while he's driving along. Doesn't really interact with them in any way, but says, oh, did you notice that me driving you? And they're like, no, funny. And that's it. So it is such a strange hour of television. And I kind of was thinking like, right, so Imelda May has her kind of show, right? Yeah. But Imelda May has great kind of character and personality. And she's just this live wire and she's a brilliant performer. And Nathan Carter, I cannot tell you anything about him at the end of this. I know no more about him than that he wears suits.
Yeah.
I found it a very strange hour. And if you were watching this with Daniel O'Donnell, like, there's a reason why Daniel O'Donnell has been so famous for decades in Ireland.
He's got a twinkle in his eye.
Yeah, he's got this kind of twinkle that even if you don't like him, there's something about him that you just, there's something endearing about him because he's so nice, you know?
Mm.
And Nathan Carter is just nice.
But there's no twinkle.
But there's no twinkle.
Okay, well, fair enough. But maybe you could perhaps not fault him for that, but fault the programme and that they're putting him into positions where he's not really equipped to be doing 100%. Interviews or stunts.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Is it better or worse than Blind Date? Which is a grotesque abomination, in my opinion.
I don't know, because at least with Blind Date you get... Well, I was about to say you get more variety, but you don't. You just get the same stupid innuendo, like, over and over again.
Yeah.
And blunt innuendo.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's not even innuendo. No, in your endo. James Dempsey, thank you very much for coming into us. We'll take a break. Back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. Gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.